All participants, this conference is being recorded. If you have any objections, you may disconnect at this time. You may begin.
Thank you, Kelly. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening to everyone. On today's Consumer Metrics call on Tuesday, the 5th of June, we have Cheryl Langdon-Orr, Steve Del Bianco, Olivier Crépin-Leblon, Rosemary Sinclair, Tobias Mahler. From staff, we have Barry Cobb, Julie Hendland, and myself, Gisela Gruber. Apologies noted today from Jonathan Robinson and Michael Graham. And if I could also please remind everyone to state their names when speaking for transcript purposes. Thank you. Over to you, Barry and Rosemary.
Thanks, Gisela. Pardon me. If we just look at our agenda, the first thing we are going to do is review the open action items. Would you mind taking us through those, Barry? Or introducing them in any case?
Yes, Rosemary, this is Barry. The first one, again, is just to update our public comment survey form and send that out. That'll be a reoccurring action item until we've traversed all of the comments. The second one is to create a draft of the PowerPoint that we'll use for the PROG sessions with the GNSO and possibly the GAC. I still have that action outstanding. I've got the draft started, and I should have that out to the list here in a couple of days. I've kind of been holding back on completing it because it seems that several of our definitions and some of the content may change quite a bit between now and then. So at any rate, I'll have the first draft out later this week.
Okay.
The only other thing I'd like to bring up is with respect to our schedule. Of course, today is the 5th of June, and we're continuing on with the public comments. Looking at the comment tool, we have a lot to go through, and I'm not so confident that we'll be able to complete all of the comments even by our 12 June meeting. So maybe towards the end of the call, we can strategize about what our next few sessions may look like. That's all I have. Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Barry. So I guess that was a timely reminder to all of us to keep the pace moving as quickly as we can. So that then takes us to item number three. And I'm wondering, in view of what Barry just said, whether we might hold that item. I'll make absolutely sure we've got 10 minutes at the call. To have a look at that comment from Wendy, but I think it might be best for us to dive right into the continuation of the public comment review. So unless I hear a quick growl, that's what I'll do. And in that case, I wonder if Tobias could take us through his red line, which we're looking at. I think that incorporates Cheryl's draft changes, but if not, then I'm sure we'll hear from Cheryl about that. So, Tobias, would you mind just taking us through your suggested amendments?
Yes, thank you. What I did basically was, this is Tobias, for the record, that I had a look at all the elements that we included in the rather lengthy definition, and my idea was to basically just structure this a bit according to criteria that are often used in the literature about trusts, and that is we usually have a truster, someone who trusts, and a trustee, someone who is trusted, and then some context or issues that are relevant for the trust. So basically, this is not in the document we are seeing right now, but I basically created, here's the table where I sorted these out, and I tried to find one general criterion under which we could subsume all the others. And my idea was to basically say that the trustors are all the same in all the parts. And then we have different kinds of trustees, and so basically we can just omit the trustees at the beginning and then detail them afterwards, and find one, the most general aspect, and include that as a general feature of trust. So if we could go to the proposed definition. Let me see. Yeah. My idea was to say that if we start by saying that consumer trust is defined as the confidence registrants and users have in the domain name system, and then we can explain that in three different points. The first is about the consistency of the name resolution. That's more technically within what is usually understood as the domain name system. The second is the confidence that a TLD registry operator is fulfilling its purpose, the proposed purpose, and is complying with ICANN policies and applicable laws. So here we have the aspect of the trustee being the registry operator. And then we have a third point, which is trust in efforts to curtail susceptibility to abuse. And that is basically a whole class of different trustees, and all of these are basically not explained in the definition, but then explained in the third point of note one, you can see below on the screen. So my claim would be that all the elements that were in the other definitions are there. I just try to sort them a bit more into categories so it's easier to read them. Thank you.
Thanks, Tobias. Is there any reaction or comment on Tobias's suggested way forward on this? Steve?
Thanks. Tobias, it's a vast improvement as we watch this language evolve, and I appreciate the perspective you brought of trustors and trustees. With respect to only the third, little I, three, I went back and reread the U.S. government comments. I looked at, again, who is the entity that we want to place the trust in, and I believe that the way you have number three fails to identify an entity when it otherwise could. Mm. So if you look in the chat, I'm going to suggest a new number three, that it be confidence in ICANN's compliance function, as opposed to trust in efforts to curtail susceptibility to abuse. Mm-hmm. What I'm looking to do is to hang it on ICANN, who is in charge of compliance, and it does pick up on little I too, because there we're suggesting that complying with ICANN policies is important. We have to have confidence that they're complying, and part of that is trust or confidence in ICANN's compliance function. And I'd be interested to see whether we're getting at the right entity there, ICANN, as opposed to the generic entity of the DNS at large. Thanks.
Thanks, Steve. Any other comments? Tobias, do you want to give us a view on that suggestion?
I would be fine with that. And basically, we still have the longer version below in the third remark to note one.
Mm-hmm.
So I would say Steve's suggestion is even clearer.
Yeah. Thanks, Tobias. Rosemary here. I also thought that was a very useful clarification on some excellent work. I actually wondered whether it would be useful to put the trust or trustee diagram in the back of our work, because I found it incredibly helpful in clarifying my thinking.
Yeah, Rosemary, Cheryl here, you took the words right out of my mouth. I'm delighted with the change, and particularly with Steve's additional intervention there with the little triple I's. But I certainly was going to suggest that we put that table in, because it also links us to, in inverted commas, the literature, and I think that's important.
Mm. Yeah. That's good. Just in the chat, we've got a discussion going on about internet users rather than just users.
Yeah, I would feel more comfortable if we did incorporate, Cheryl, here for the record, if we did incorporate that, but I am aware that the original text on the overall definition still has it. But if we can do a global replace and move users into internet users, I think that would make certainly some of the people in my part of the community much happier. As opposed
seconded.
To, you know, yep. Users.
Seconded. It's Olivier. Sorry, I jumped in, but I haven't got any hand in the room, so yeah,
not,
Olivier, you're
not,
fine
not
with that.
Do I, so we'll both be rude today.
All
right. So we'll take that suggestion out of the chat room and adopt it. And Olivia, if you can keep jumping in, since you haven't got a chat, then we'll clear the way for you whenever you do that.
Thank you, Rosemary.
Now, okay, so I think we're okay on that point, which was a great piece of work by Tobias. Thank you so much, and everybody else. So I think, Barry, that means we can go back to our tool.
Yes, just give me 1 second. So just to clarify, so little I3 mm-hmm. is supposed to read confidence and ICANN's compliance function
mm-hmm.
to curtail susceptibility to abuse.
Rosemary here, I think it was just confidence in ICANN's compliance function. But maybe Steve could just clarify for all of us.
Yes, that's right.
Are you okay with that now, Barry?
Yes, just...
Whenever you're ready.
Making sure to document all of this. Okay. All right, now I've got the tool, comment tool being shared, and before we get to where we left off last week, there was one other action, which is for Michael Graham, and he was going to consolidate the UDRP and URS metrics together with one, as well as the relative incidence of litigation. As you know, Michael's not able to attend the call today, but he did state in his note that he will send out the draft as soon as he gets it, which should be sometime this week. I'm not talking today. So with that in mind, we're all the way down. Back to the USG comments, and specifically this was with respect to the consumer trust metrics, and where we left off was we wanted to discuss each of the individual metrics that were proposed by the U.S. government, which are here. And once we complete this one, then we'll have completed consumer trust.
Rosemary here. Steve, I was wondering if it might be the quickest way if you could give us a view on whether these dot points are, in fact, covered in the range of measures that we've proposed.
That might take a good deal of time to go through them.
Okay. Well, perhaps another thought then.
I agree, and I'm fully prepared to do that.
I do think
that they stimulate lots of discussion. There are a handful of them that we know we have in there. And if it would be more constructive, I could respond to the question you just posed offline the way that Cheryl and Tobias and Michael did with respect to the definition. Just in an effort to try to move us ahead to some other questions.
I think that's a good idea. And again, unless I hear a growl, then we'll adopt that very thankfully, Steve. Okay, so we've got a green tick from Tobias, so that's a quorum we're on.
So item 25 in the table, My assignment is to specifically address all of those bullets and indicate where we have tracked them or some other reaction to them, okay?
Great. Thank you.
Cheryl here. That's fantastic, because in my reading of it, you know, some of them we certainly have picked up, but I think that with the language tweak, it could be more obvious what we intend versus how someone's read it, I think, is more of the issue in some cases.
Mm-hmm. And
one final point on that is that some of the items that the USG in particular is asked about are items that simply get surveyed. And when they're surveyed, we didn't feel compelled to delineate every single question that the survey designers would put into the survey.
And
we didn't feel it was necessary to put three-year targets for each and every survey question. What we said about the survey is that things should be better than they were pre-GTLD, and they should be improving over time. And that is meant to imply that the overall survey rating is better over time. We didn't have any illusions that each and every survey question would show a lockstep march of improvement over time. Some of these are in existing metrics. Some of them are in survey questions. So is it okay with everyone if that's the way I pursue the analysis?
Steve, Cheryl here. Absolutely. But I think what we might need to do is also make that bleedingly clear.
Mm-hmm.
Will do.
Coming back to the "we are not the review team" line.
Okay, so are you right with that, Gary?
Yes, good to go.
Okay.
All right, we'll kick off consumer choice definitions. The first comment is from IMTA, and I'll quickly read through their comment. Definition of consumer choice. We believe the definition of consumer choice should be expanded. Consumer is defined in the advice as an actual or potential Internet users and registrants. We understand this to mean not only parties which register or may register domain names or users of the new GTLD program, but the entire range of users of the Internet itself. This includes companies, consumers, children, and others. However, the proposed definition of consumer choice appears not to relate to the experiences of or choice enjoyed by users. The advice defines consumer choice as the range of options available to registrants and users of domain scripts and languages, and for TLDs that offer choices as to the proposed purpose and integrity of their domain name registrant. Contrary to the definition of consumer, then this definition does not relate to the experience of or choices of users in the scope of domain names, but only to the availability of domain names to potential registrants and the integrity of registries to their contracted for purposes. We do not believe that it is enough to consider whether the new GTLDs give users a greater choice of domains and the sites within the domains to turn on. In order to determine whether the expected expansion of the number of new GTLDs provides meaningful choice, we believe metrics should be considered that measure the positive and negative aspects of presenting users with a broader selection, their ability to determine trustworthy domains as opposed to others, and the ability to find sites and resources they are seeking. This would inevitably include consideration of the ability of search engines to find and link consumers to the sites and resources for which they are searching. From a trademark standpoint, we believe the search engine analysis should include analysis of the accuracy of search engine results both before and after new GTLDs are introduced, along with analysis of the ability of search engines to discriminate between sites which meet the proposed purpose for which they were established as opposed to those that do not. Another possible area of inquiry might be whether the new GTLDs provide a greater range of sites, registrants, and resources than existed prior to the program.
If I can make a suggestion, let's focus just on the definition before we dive into the table of what measures there are.
Okay, and I think that's a good idea, because I'm just having trouble getting my mind into gear about this point. So perhaps if could you have a stab at it, Steve?
I do. I really appreciate how much time INTA put into all this stuff, but it strikes me that we simply repeated the words registrants and users, when in fact if we said the word consumers, I believe INTA would be satisfied that our definition of consumers was both actual and potential, so it would have covered everything. So us deciding to import the words registrants and users without the phrase actual and potential, it might have been what created the problem, because Intel might be perceiving that we were carving out from the choice population, we were carving out the notion of potential. So there's two ways to go. As I indicated in the chat, we could change the word registrants and users to consumers, putting it maybe even in uppercase so they know it's a defined term.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is to put the more fulsome definition of consumer and jam it into the definition. But either way, I believe that gets us through the first long paragraph of their definition. Thanks.
Okay. I see. So in the definition, expand to actual and potential registrants and users.
Or trim it back to simply the word consumers as a defined term in uppercase.
If we were going to do it that way, Steve, then we should do that in consumer trust as well, because we've got registrants and users in consumer trust.
I could not agree more. I believe that when you have a defined term, you make it easier for people to use the defined term and to use an uppercase, a proper case, to define it as a defined term.
Are there any other thoughts on that from anybody? If not...
This is Tobias. I would be fine with that. I've suggested it before, and there is this issue with the term consumer. But I also think that once you've defined it this way, there shouldn't be a problem in using it in the way we've defined it. Thanks.
Okay, thanks, Tobias. Well, let's adopt that suggested approach by Steve. So then, Steve, do you think that addresses most of the other concerns?
Yeah, let's take a look at that. Barry, you read it carefully. Does the first block paragraph from INTA, is that entire concern addressed by returning to the more expansive concept of consumer as opposed to just registrants and users?
This is Barry. Personally, I can say yes, but I can't speak for INTA in this regard.
Well, perhaps it
certainly gets us through the end of the word purposes, which is the middle of the big, long paragraph.
Yeah.
And if we're all good with that, then we would turn to the rest of their paragraph, which could get to questions about metrics. However, we ought to jump down to look at others who've made suggestions for the definition in 27. Mm-hmm. And I don't know whether any of the others, including the USG, have definitional suggestions. Let's get all those out of the way before we deep dive into the specific line items under consumer choice.
That's a good approach. Can the tool do that, Barry, or do we have to scroll through all the comments serially in this section?
We'll just scroll serially. So I'll go ahead and move on to 27, and then we can come back to the last paragraph from INTA in 26.
Yeah.
Okay, this is from INTA as well. Consumer choice is defined for registrants and users as the range of options available for registrants and users of domain scripts and languages, or TLDs, and users as the range of options for users to access and use websites and resources in both legacy and new TLDs that offer choices as to the proposed purpose and integrity of their domain name registrant. And the blue underline is supposed to signify that that's what their proposed change was, which kind of seems counter to us using consumer and
Rosemary here. Well, let's assume that we've covered registrants and users with our earlier discussion and go to the second point, which I think is the point that Evan Lebovich raised some time ago, and for users as the range of options for users to access and use websites and resources. So is that not the discussion that Evan took us to of QR codes and mobile apps and all sorts of other things? Which was covered in our letter, I think. Olivier? And then Steve?
I'm sorry, I didn't put my hand up.
Oh, no, now you've got your hand up. Okay, no problem. Steve?
Yeah, let me answer your question first, Rosemary. I do not believe that INTA was addressing Evan Leibovich's concern about non-URL use of the Internet.
Okay.
Do not think that. And I'm
not.
Clarify that. I agree. You know what I mean, Cheryl? And I think we can clarify.
Oh, I do. That's why I was punting it to Olivier, because trying to get into the entrails of Evan's mind on this is pretty complicated. And Evan has exposed this view in a whole lot of other fora, and I thought Olivier might be more across that than I am. That's all. But yeah, I agree.
I think we were very let's say respectful of Evan's view. But what all of us agreed to on the working group was to stay within scope.
Yes, and yes.
The affirmation and the resolution had to do with the new GTLD program. That's what we're measuring here. The new GTLD program. And the GTLD program is about TLDs, which are domain names. The domain names are registered and they're resolved. And that is all that ICANN has purview over, registrations and resolutions. If the way people get at something is a QR code, it still does a resolution somewhere along the line of scanning the QR code and bringing up a page. If there is corruption or abuse in getting from a QR code to a domain name, that is not within ICANN's purview. So Evan is right. There are other ways people get to websites. But it is not something that we are charged with measuring and evaluating. So having said that, I would have the same reaction to what Michael put here when he chooses to expand, I think, in the blue underlined text. It strikes me that both legacy and new TLDs is the key. That's the key part of his underlined blue, both legacy and new. That also has the risk of expanding scope beyond what we are charged with. Because if the new GTLD program fails to create choices for people, it will be judged on its own. And we wouldn't be judging the legacy TLDs as part of a program, as part of a review charged with looking at the expansion of TLDs. I don't know why we would do that. I feel like our original definition, returning to the word consumer, instead of the words registrants and users, probably get us there, because he uses the words access and use websites. Well, the access, I guess, is a user, and the use of a website is both a user and a registrant.
Yep.
And that's why ours is so much better, is that we just simply say choices as to the proposed purpose and integrity of the domain name registrants. I don't feel compelled to accept the INTA blue line there.
Okay.
Well, what's the rest of you think?
Okay. Tobias?
Yes, thank you. This is Tobias. I'm not really sure what INTA is proposing here, but it looks like they are distinguishing between two groups. The first group is registrant users, and there they accept the first part of our definition, and then they add users, which seems to be only Internet users. But I'm not really sure why that should be beneficial. So I'm not really convinced that this really helps us here. Thank you.
Thanks, Tobias. Olivier?
Thank you, Rosemary. It's Olivier for the transcript. I just wanted to convey part of what Evan was saying, and Steve said it very clearly. However, there is one thing, though. The domain names and the DNS are only there to basically provide a more easily understandable label, if you want, rather than just an IP address. QR codes can resolve directly to an IP address rather than resolving to a domain name, in which case the DNS itself is totally out of the picture. And I think that Evan was trying to emphasize this, that QR code could be a replacement of a domain name and will not use the DNS at all, because at that point you're dealing with IP numbers, and IP numbers are actual routing, which has nothing to do with the DNS. And so it's totally outside of ICANN's scope. The routing of packets around the network are not within ICANN's scope. That said, the response which the group provided, and which was that what Evan is mentioning is outside the working group scope, is one which I agree with. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Cheryl, he raised me.
Yes, Cheryl.
I couldn't agree with Olivier more, but particularly more with what Steve said. I just wanted to make really sure that we don't labour under the error for the record that QR codes only use the IP address. Of course, QR codes, being sophisticated little things, which I'm actually quite passionate about. Otherwise, my business card wouldn't be one, and my new set of jewellery wouldn't be being cast in the form of them. They actually can also resolve to individual pages and subsets. So it can, in fact, in the more sophisticated use, at least in the QR code, lurk back into the wonderful world of DNS. It's adjunct. All the arguments are philosophical and probably reasonable on either side, but it is out of scope.
Okay, so bringing all this to a conclusion, Olivier?
Thank you, Rosemary. Just wanted to then touch on what INTA has been writing with regards to search engines, et cetera. I again think that we're dealing with something which is not converging. It seems to be diverging, and that if we start going further, then you search for search engines, then what search engines, then are we going to do on a per search engine basis? We cannot generalize on all search engines. And then per language basis, perhaps? And then what about the Facebook and these other networks? Will they be affected one way or other? I really think that at that point we're going into something which effectively gets us to redesign the wheel from scratch and go into a mission which will have ICANN monitor every single thing that's happening on the Internet from the moment a computer is turned on to the moment an email is sent, et cetera, et cetera. It just becomes... I mean, then you can also expand it to every single application that takes place out there. Email, FTP, web, of course, et cetera. It just becomes really unmanageable. And I think that as far as the finances are concerned, to be able to track all of that, it would be very, very hard, financially speaking. Thanks,
Olivia.
Cheryl? We've got to keep to scope, and our scope is about measuring the effect of the new GTLD program in the domain name system, comparing what we've got now to what is operational and the effect of what is operational on our defined, in inverted commas, marketplace. And I use the marketplace in inverted commas because if we go down this particular rabbit hole, what we are doing is exposing, in my view, ICANN to valid criticism that it is not sticking to its knitting, and I am not a free market economy fan. Sorry, Steve, etc. But I think it causes as many problems as it does solutions. But anyway, I sort of firmly base myself in Asia on that part, I guess. But what it does do well is sift and sort all this stuff out, and if there is a market advantage in that sort of differentiation, then the creator of the product, which is currently called search engine but could be called something else when someone invents it, will utilize whatever it takes to say what its services are will get to where the end user wants to be using the registration system and the domain name system and the IP addresses and combinations thereof. To use the rationale that is being given here, would actually go more back to that the DNS itself is redundant and things like QR codes, which is actually competition for search engines, are going to, storm the place as opposed to people are going to choose to have billboards and mail outs. You know, it's a matter of marketing choice.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, getting off my soapbox, and I will stop ranting now.
Thanks, Cheryl. Now, I think, Steve, over to you.
Thank you. I do believe that search engines are just one of several ways that URLs are presented to users.
Mm-hmm.
And others are hyperlinks that show up in a tweet. Others would be links that show up on other web pages. There's also the business cards, logos on shirts, URL that shows up at the end of a television commercial, the URL that's read out loud to you on a radio commercial. Please go to www.wellsfargo.bank for more information.
Mm-hmm.
It's also on lots of other visual media that allow people to look at it. There is an element that Inta's getting at that we may have missed, though, in that those URLs are intended not only to offer choice, but they're intended to offer meaningful choice,
mm-hmm.
in the sense that if I see .bank in that URL, whether it's on a search engine or a site, it's supposed to convey something. Now, our definition of choice gets to the notion that it's supposed to convey something about the proposed purpose and integrity
mm-hmm.
To live to the left of that dot, that we are suggesting that consumers would benefit from additional choice, that they could go to a bank that ended in .bank or a bank that ended in .com, and if the .bank operators were spending enough money to educate people and they were enforcing their registrant restrictions, over time people would have the choice of going to a bank or a .com, and they might be more confident doing their banking at a .bank. That's
mm-hmm.
That's what mainly the innovation that sold out to be on the GTLD expansion. So having said all that, I believe what we could do is not expand the scope to cover search engines, business cards, TV commercials, and trucks, but instead expand the definition in front of the word choices to capture this notion that the choices have to be, they have to be meaningful choices. And meaningful gets to the notion of a significant set of choices that mean something visually when I look at them on a page, on a truck, or in a search result. So what if we put the word meaningful choices in our definition of consumer choice, put in the word meaningful in between the word offer and choices? How much of the itch of Inta does that scratch? Thank you.
Uh-huh. Tobias?
Yes, basically, this is Tobias. This would also take us to the U.S. government proposal, which I couldn't find in this table for some reason. Probably it's there, but I just didn't find it. The U.S. government also said that meaningful choices would be useful, and they qualified this further by saying that, just a second, no one else is there.
That taking into account price, quality, and product diversity, right, Tobias?
Exactly. Well, so which I think at least the meaningful is meaningful, and these three aspects I haven't really thought about, but why not?
Mm-hmm.
Thank
you. Thanks, Tobias. Olivier?
Thank you, Rosemary. It's Olivia, and I'm going to be brief in this comment. In fact, rather a question. Do you think that the INTA in this comment is basically just pointing at brand dilution
mm-hmm.
or the possibility of brand dilution? Because to me, that it's a long-winded way to basically say, does it dilute a brand?
Cheryl here. It, more than brand dilutions, Olivier, I was thinking that the effect that they were seeking us to measure was not just on the dilution of the brand, but also the effect of falseness of brand being classified, in other words, a properly trademarked and branded product versus a pseudo or copy product. And again, I think that's all fascinating, all interesting, and could in fact be the review team's choice to go and play with as a subset of what it does. But it's out of our work group's scope.
Rosemary, here, there's an element of that in their previous comment as well. Tobias?
Sorry, I just forgot to lower my hand.
Oh, sorry. Steve?
Thanks. Just a quick comment then. I think that what they're getting at here is they hope that search engines, before they rank the results, would take into account the TLD that the result comes and presumably rank the special purpose TLDs ahead of the other TLDs for which defensive registrations were made. And that is a fond hope of not only INTA but end users like me, because
yep.
I hate on bogus search results. In some cases, all the extraneous TLD registrations, the defensive registrations, in some cases they resolve to the actual intended page, but in many cases they don't. So I think it's a fond wish of INTA, it's a fond wish of me, but it has nothing to do with ICANN. So I would propose that we answer this question, this suggestion by INTA, by explaining that we don't believe that the volitional innovations made by search engines are within the purview of ICANN. So we don't want to modify the definition. However, our survey already described, our survey seeks to measure consumer confusion, maybe consumer satisfaction with the GTLD expansion. And many consumers will answer those questions based on their experience with search engines, which is what more and more of us will have to use to navigate the web, because it'll be rather fruitless to just guess at URLs. You looked at our survey on page 7 under measures of consumer trust. We had an explicit call out to measure, quote, confusion about new GTLDs. While that doesn't say confusion about new GTLDs represented in that. Question for the group, if you look at our table of metrics for consumer choice, did we have a survey of consumers in there? We did. We had a consumer survey. Well, maybe not. Maybe we didn't have a consumer survey. We had an online survey of duplicate registrations. Okay, so, hey, team, we did not have a consumer survey.
We could expand.
Under consumer choice.
We could expand.
If we, yes, and by the way, it wouldn't be a separate survey, right? It'd be more questions.
That's why I use the word expand.
Thank you. Agree with you completely. So Barry, to register this one for the notes, suggesting that we would why we don't believe that the voluntary innovations of search engines are within the scope of ICANN. We are confident that consumer confusion with respect to things like search engines should be measured as part of the survey, the consumer survey. The survey was first discussed under our consumer trust metrics, but the survey of those same population should include questions regarding to choice. It might also include questions regarding to competition, which we are about to get to. So let's find a way to identify that the survey, the consumer survey identified under consumer trust, would include questions that cover choice and competition, and find a way to note into the choice table that we'll try to cover that as well. Thank you.
Thanks, Steve. So I wonder if, Barry, could you summarize that as you understand it, just so that we're clear?
Yes, so this includes both 26 and 27. Basically, we're going to modify our current definition with the use of consumer to replace registrants and users. And in fact, if I understand that, we're going to do that to all of our definitions. And then we're also, for consumer choice, we're also going to add the word meaningful before choices in our definition. And then the third recommended change is to connect or expand our survey from consumer trust to also include elements of consumer choice and competition within the same survey population.
And Rosemary here, do we want to make the comment that the inter-suggestions are taking us out of scope as we see it, but then we're proposing to do A, B, and C? Do we want to note that?
This is Barry.
Rosemary and Steve, I mean, we should certainly note that we don't have to warn that they're taking us out of scope, because we're acknowledging that the scope of the scope of consumer confusion about search results is within scope when you do a survey, because we want to learn whether it's true. What's quote-unquote out of scope is that it's not ICANN's responsibility, but it may be a symptom of a dramatic in the number of GTLDs, as well as a dramatic defensive registration. So that is a symptom that we seek to measure in a consumer survey, but I don't believe it explicitly called out in the definition of consumer choice.
Yes, sorry, Rosemary here. Yes, no, I was happy with the suggestion about adding meaningful and not changing the definition. I just wondered whether we should capture our discussion about, you know, search engines and applications becoming ICANN's responsibility. But I'm also happy if the group feels that we've dealt with it by taking the actions that Barry just outlined for us, then I'm happy to just leave the point there.
Cheryl here. Rosemary, if there's an appropriate place in the text to note that, just so it's bleedingly obvious, I'd be happy with it. So, you know, noting that the remit of ICANN is not inclusive of such things as insert the grab bag and close quotes, that'd be okay with me. I just don't think we need to labour the point, but I'm also aware of people who've put particularly huge amounts of time into mulling over our words and dissecting them and trying to get them right. For us to put in 15 more words somewhere in the text recognising it would be no harm at all. In fact, probably more good than harm.
This is Barry. On pages 2 and 3 of our advice letter, we have this section on scope of advice, which talks about the QR codes and what's not in scope for ICANN's purview.
Yes.
Maybe we can append a couple of sentences into that section.
Perfect, Barry. Perfect.
Yep. That's a great idea. Thanks, Barry. Okay, so we're ready to move to 28 when Barry's ready.
Okay, number 28, we've already reviewed this one. This was from Andy Mack in the Costa Rica session. And we were going to just ensure, I think, in either a footnote about the survey that we include elements of outreach and awareness of new TLDs into the survey.
And by the way, folks, let's put that under the new row under the consumer choice where we reference existing survey. That way, instead of burying it in a long list of things to measure under the consumer trust consumer survey, it'll be clear that elements are here. So we already have two, right? We have confusion about search engines and other links, as well as the general awareness that Andy Mack has.
Yep, good idea.
Okay. So are you clear on that, Barry?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, good.
And I'm looking at number 29, and I think I've messed up here. We're still in the consumer choice section, but I've listed competition here. So if the working group doesn't mind, we can come back to this when we get into competition.
Yes, I think that's a good idea.
And so now we'll move into the consumer choice metrics. And if somebody will read this out loud for me, I'll make a correction to my error there.
Well, Rosemary here, perhaps if I read this out loud. CBBB requests that the costs of trademark abuse be tracked by calculating the number of defensive registrations that will follow in the new GTLD registries, as well as calculating the number of blocking of trademarks that will occur during sunrise periods in the new GTLDs. Such costs are adverse to the public interest and ultimately consumers. To minimise such costs, CBBB
strongly urges ICANN to put in place a central trademark clearinghouse for valid trademark holders to block registries and registrars from sales of such valid trademarks to registrants. This will reduce the amount of profiteering that has taken place in the past when registrars are allowed to sell others' trademarks, which does nothing to increase competition on the internet. ICANN has essentially allowed the blatant violation of others' trademark rights for too long, and if it continues to allow this, it should document the amount of such illegal activity. And that comment is related to metrics 1, 2 and 3. Just let me remind myself and everybody else what those are. So they are the first three measures of consumer choice. Steve.
Thanks, Rosemary. I would take what Anjali, this is Better Business Bureau's comments. I would say that we bifurcate her comment. Mm-hmm. Everything starts with is normative, where she prescribing mm-hmm. on wish for a policy change at ICANN is simply out of scope yeah. for us. We're not making policy. We're measuring the yeah. success of a program. With all due respect, we drop everything underneath the words to minimize such costs.
Mm-hmm.
Set that aside and respectfully call it a policy advice. It's outside the scope of what this group is working on.
Mm-hmm.
Now, turning to the stuff before the words to minimize,
mm-hmm.
would map it to what we have on page 10 of our table.
Yeah.
And this group went way the hell out on a limb to try to mm-hmm. suggest that ICANN do an estimate of the quantity of defensive registration.
Mm-hmm.
Not everyone will agree on what our estimate measurement was. Some other people say that they don't even quibble with our estimating measure. They quibble with the target we came up with, which is 15%.
Mm-hmm.
But we're never going to please everybody, and we want to stand by our attempt at least to mm-hmm. advise the board, because after all, we're not making these up. We're advising them that they try to measure the quantity of the registration.
Yes.
All that, what Better Business Bureau is asking us is not only the number, because we've already done mm. that,
yeah.
Is the word cost.
Mm.
But they want the costs. And what I'd like to respond to there is that my recommendation is that we suggest that we can foresee no mechanism by which ICANN could measure the individual expenditures of all those people who made what for their purposes was a defensive registration.
Mm-hmm.
Ed, we looked to do an estimate of a rough estimate of the aggregate number of defensive registrations. And we can identify the rows in our table on page 10 that tried to do that. And it's really heavily on numbers, in the rows number 1, 2, and 3,
mm-hmm.
which includes zone snapshots. Remember all that work that Barry helped us work
yep.
out?
Mm-hmm.
And then the online survey. So I would point to that to say that we're making a good faith estimate of the quantity, the relative quantity at least, of defensive registrations, but
mm-hmm.
we could not know the actual expenditures or costs of registrants when they made decisions that may have been for defensive purposes.
Mm. Thanks, Steve. Rosemary here, we could, in the survey, ask people to identify any expenditures that they had incurred, but we can't do it globally. But it's to me, it's a question of whether you even want to include that sort of question, and I suppose that matter would come to the fore in discussion about the structure of the survey and what matters were covered in the survey. So perhaps the other point to make is that we have suggested a survey on consumer choice. But I'm happy if we just go forward with Steve's comments, that we've focused our effort on
attempting to measure the quantity of defensive registrations, but not the cost. Because leave it at that. So any other thoughts on that before we ask Barry if he's clear on the response?
All good from me.
Good. Okay. So Barry, are you clear on our response there?
I didn't hear that there was an actual change to anything in our advice letter, right?
No. I think we're suggesting just in our table, noting, I suppose, that we are proposing to measure the number of defensive registrations. We have a set of metrics around that.
Right, but that would be a change. That would be a recommended action description so that we can explain to the community how we reacted to their comment. But it doesn't require a change to page 10 on our actual table of metrics, Rosemary.
No, so it's in the working group response, I guess I'm seeing. That point you made, Stephen, I'm not suggesting that we put it in the table, that we're already sticking our necks out by suggesting that we try to measure the quantity of such registrations, but that we see it as pretty impossible to measure the cost, which is the Bureau for Better Business's point. But it wouldn't change. It doesn't go to a recommendation, no. Tobias?
This is Tobias. I just have a small question. You said this is going to be in the working group's response. I was under the impression that our response is just the next edition of the letter. Or will there be any other official response? Thank you.
This is Barry. I can answer that. You're correct. Our only real response owed to the community is our final version of the draft letter. If community members are interested to see what the exact response is, this public comment tool will be posted in the public comment forum, and then they also have access to previous MP3s or the transcripts to understand how the working group deliberated around that comment.
Okay, so in this tool, what we're saying is that we think this is already covered in our advice letter, or the extent of what we're going to do is covered in the advice letter, page 10.
That's my understanding.
But it is important, and I'm kind of sticking my ATRT panel hat on here. It is extremely important that what we're doing now and utilising our opportunity to put meaningful and thoughtful comments and responses into the public comment review tool. That is a public document, and believe me, that makes a huge difference when those who have put the huge effort in to make a public comment can track and find that it is not simply a black box that they funnel their valuable time and energies into. Cannot be underestimated that taking all of this stuff seriously and recording it is hugely important, not only for the reputation of our own work group and other work groups, Barry, because we've seen this change in the last couple of years. In fact, that really only 18 months. But for ICANN as a whole and the multi-stakeholder model, this is critical stuff we're doing.
Thanks, Cheryl. Tobias?
Yes, this is Tobias. Thanks. That was basically an answer to my question. Very nice. Thank you.
Fine. Rosemary here again. Maybe I'm now realising a limitation of the tool. I'm just imagining myself as chair of the working group, interacting with one of the stakeholders, and out of our 70 pages of comments, trying to remember why, in regard to comment number 30, we didn't do anything, which is the other way of interpreting this. So I wonder if it's possible, under recommended action, for us to just note
that we're not taking any action because we feel that trying to measure the costs as proposed by this comment are just too difficult, beyond scope, whatever just the core of our reasoning is, so that rather than me or any one of us having to trawl through the transcript to remember, and perhaps it's a comment on my own memory here rather than anyone else on this working group, but I'm sure by the time I get to page 70 I will have forgotten why on page 17 I haven't responded in any way to that comment. And part of it is just the issue that Cheryl was raising, that to note just the core of our response.
Rosemary, this is
a good process. Yes, Barry.
Column 3 is for the working group response, and in there I try to capture the key deliberation points across the working group. And so one of those is that, you know, we acknowledge that we're trying to acquire the quantity of defensive rate registration. The working group doesn't believe there's an accurate mechanism to quantify the costs associated with those and different points like that.
Yes. So, Barry, are you suggesting that that last point, that we don't think it's possible to accurately quantify the costs, can be put into the working group response column?
Yeah, that's what I've added in there, yes.
Oh, sorry. I'm looking at the previous version.
Right, yeah. I'm sorry. I can't update in real time on the Adobe Connect version.
Okay, got it. Okay. Well, I think that's my early...
Very Cheryl here. In my future utopian world, every part of all of these documents will be so easily searchable by these externally created market force driven search capabilities that it'll be easy for us, Rosemary, to find the specific reference to line 32.
Even at 5 a.m. in the morning, Cheryl.
even at 5 a.m. in the morning, dear, that's right.
Yeah. Which may have something to do with my slowness, so apologies to the working group. So Barry's obviously clear on what we're doing, which is a great leaping-off point to go to the next point in the tool.
And, Rosemary, I've recovered from my error, and I've just pasted the USG's public comment version of consumer choice definition.
Mm-hmm.
And why don't we just go ahead and cover that, I think.
Sure, that's good.
I'll go ahead and read it out, but I believe Tobias's point earlier about the use of meaningful will have it covered, but just to be sure. Consumer choice is defined as the range of meaningful options, taking into account price, quality, and product diversity available to registrants and users for domain scripts and languages, and for TLDs that offer choices as the proposed purpose and integrity of their domain name registrant. Consumer choice must be assessed together with consumer trust and competition to aid in determining the overall cost and benefit incurred by consumers and other market participants. The last sentence, I think everyone's aware that one's repeated across all three definitions by the USG, and if the working group is comfortable with our inclusion of meaningful into our revised definition, then I believe we can consider this covered.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Barry. Any reaction to that?
Just agreement.
So, if I understand it, Barry's suggesting that we redefine consumer choice down to the end of the first sentence, and now I've lost where we're going to put meaningful. TLDs that offer meaningful choices as to the proposed purpose. Is that the suggestion, Barry?
Yes, for our comments in 26.
Okay, and then drop off the last sentence.
Correct.
Okay, thanks. Steve?
Hey, thank you. I believe that to accommodate the USG, I'd like to do the same thing we did under trust, which is only put the word meaningful into the definition of and put the parenthetical of taking into account price, quantity, and diversity, and put that plus the
the last sentence of the paragraph and put them into the notes.
Mm-hmm.
Notes that we have after the definition of consumer choice. Could you refer to our initial advice letter?
Yeah.
Where we laid out our definition. We went on these definitions. They're on page 4. If you recall, the U.S. government recognized the importance of the notes because they made some notes edits themselves.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so on choice, I realized that on our notes, we didn't have any notes on choice.
Mm-hmm.
And I would add that we should have a note. It would be note 2.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
It would note on the definition of choice.
Mm-hmm.
And it would that meaningful options will include price, quality, product diversity. Moreover, choice must be assessed together with trust, blah, 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 blah. So we accommodate the USG the same way they actually recommended.
Mm-hmm.
Under their other definitional changes, which they assumed that we would have expand the note.
Mm-hmm.
They handled trust. So, Barry, do I need to repeat any of that, or do you get it all?
I think I got it. We'll, per our number 26, still include meaningful. And then we'll also add a second note, meaningful options will include price, quality, and product diversity. And then take the last sentence and add that in the note 2 as well.
Mm-hmm.
And note 2 would be shifted down to note 3, et cetera.
Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah. Any
Tobias.
Other? Tobias?
Yeah, just a small comment. Maybe this sentence that is repeated in all three of the definitions, I would just suggest that we keep that separated as a note in itself and not merge it with the others.
Mm-hmm.
In the Word document I sent around yesterday, I had a proposal for how that could be done.
Mm-hmm. Would you like to just remind us what that proposal was, Tobias?
Yeah,
Barry, are you putting it up, Barry? Good, thank you.
You have it? Okay.
It's note number 5, Tobias, is it?
Yes, right.
Look, I think that's a great suggestion to include that so that we don't have to keep repeating that point through the whole document, and in fact, we kind of made it ourselves in note 2, where we talk at least about competition and consumer choice being closely related. So that would be the third response here, Barry, to include a new note, which might be 6 now, I'm not sure, in those notes on the definitions. Okay, any other thoughts on that? If not, then Barry, are you clear on the response?
Yes.
Okay, great.
Okay. So I believe we're on 31 now, still within consumer choice metrics. This one was from Annalisa Roger, public comment. She's referring to our included metric number 4, measure the increased geographic diversity of registrants across all new GPLDs as an indication of new choices presented by GPLD expansion. Do not count privacy proxy registrations. Her response is geographic diversity of registrants actually using the new GPLDs. Is there widespread adoption of new GPLDs in regions around the world that are representative of the Internet's reach? Has the program been accepted and understood across the regions, and is there evidence that new GPLDs as a general group are being registered and used across the world? Note this is different that diversity and who is managing the new GPLDs. ability of new GTLDs to empower communities, regions, brands, and people. Consider doing a study of group of communities around delegated new GTLD streams before and after their launch, before and after they launch their GTLD, compared to similar communities who do not have GTLD streams.
Thanks, Barry. And now that I understand how the tool is working, what you're reminding us of, Barry, is that in our metrics in this area, number four, we have a metric, which is in fact in bold in the comment section 31. So we're open now for discussion. Steve?
On previous calls with this group,
mm-hmm.
we governed and decided that we did not, we discussed extensively this notion of the counting of privacies and proxies.
Mm-hmm.
And I would look for the group to help me out on that. In the bold text at the top,
mm-hmm.
if you recall, we took out the do not count privacy and proxy from the defensive register account, but I don't know that we discussed it with respect to this one,
mm-hmm.
geographic difference. Do you folks believe that if you go through the zone and the WHOIS data, can we know about the geographic origin of a registrant if they have used privacy or proxy, or does that prevent us from knowing what we seek to know?
Very loosely, about the only way that you would be able to kind of come up with the metric in the backdoor perspective is based on the registrar itself, and that's no guarantee that
yeah.
they are strictly confining their registrations to that geography or that group of yeah. persons, but that would be about as far as we could take it.
Well, hang on. I mean, first,
it's going to give
real
you
quick.
Dirty data. It'll give you dirty data.
Mm-hmm.
So, Cheryl, you would advocate that we do not count. We leave it right. in there, the do not count.
As I have advocated before, it'll give you dirty
yeah.
data.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody sort of in agreement on that?
Rosemary here, yes. I'm not actually sure that's the point that's being raised here. I think the point is a broader point about understanding and accepting the program and talking about adoption, in a much wider scope. I think all we can do is, as we've suggested, measure the increased diversity. It'll be interesting to see what we see, whether it is increased diversity. But I think these points are much more general in nature, and I'm not sure that we can take that on board in this piece of work. But I was wondering if Cheryl or Olivier might give us their thoughts.
Olivier?
Thanks for punting it over to me, Cheryl.
I just got this.
Thanks for doing that. I have no preference, by the way. Geographic
yeah.
diversity is something which we mentioned as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, the Appite Advisory Committee was one of the primary proponents of the Joint Applicant Support Program in order to be able to try and have more geographic diversity. Now, we don't even have details on whether that was used or not at this very moment in time.
Mm.
Obviously,
mm-hmm.
we are hoping for geographic diversity of registrants. And,
mm-hmm.
But ultimately, the question then comes down to really not down to how many domain names there are out there and where they're from, but I think it's more like where the registrars and where the registries are located.
Mm-hmm.
As a measure of proximity of registrars and registries. Whether it's within the remit of this group or not is another question. I'm not 100% sure.
Steve?
Thanks. Olivier's point lit a bulb for me that maybe they do mean actual use, not just the register. Some distinction in that the way we proposed the measure mm-hmm. was to just look at the diversity of the mm-hmm. registrant. Might be that Annalise saying, before uh-huh. you count every registrant the same, check for a non-resolve, that they simply registered but never actually built a website that it goes to.
Mm.
If that's what she's getting at, we could modify our metric to say the increased geographic diversity. We said, do not count privacy and proxy registrations in parens, and that would add in parens, do not count registrations that fail to resolve.
Yep, happy with that.
If we added that in parens, it's a relatively minor thing for them to do as Barry designs the processes to walk the zone. And I think that would be a meaningful addition to a measure of choice. And so that's what I propose. Add that parenthetical on our bold stuff at the top.
And Rosemary here, and that would mean that our actual measure of geographic diversity was a much stronger and more relevant measure. Is that the effect of your suggestion, Steve?
It is, Rosemary. It's It says that it's really not a measure of diversity if 1,000 South Africans registered but nobody lit it up, or an IDN got a lot of registration but there's been no content filled out. And by the way, a redirect would count as a registration.
And that's okay.
Right, Cheryl? It's only the 404s.
Absolutely. That's okay. Cheryl here, that is not dirty data. That's valid. We may, in fact, at the end, it could be cute to sort of look at how many of those things end up in those, in inverted commas, parked or redirect issues. But I think that's a very valid way to go. I'm 100% supportive on that.
Let me finally say that when we do these counts of walking the zone, I would love to have all three statistics. I'd like to have a statistic of the total number of registrations. I'd like to have a count of within each country how many of those were privacy proxy and therefore not counted, and also how many of those were 404s and therefore not counted. So
it's always good to look in the bin, Steve, but remember a 404 is just the page not resolving, not the name not resolving.
Okay, so what we seek to capture is that the registrant set it up but didn't tell the registrar where to point the page. What is that counted as? What do you call that?
That's a redirect.
This is Barry. There's a high chance in that scenario that the registrar would have their own parked page.
Yeah. And that's okay, too.
So a redirect to my existing page, if I already had DelBianco.com, and I got one of the new TLDs for DelBianco.bike from Italy. I would, if I redirected it to the exact same page,
that's
a redirect. Okay. By a redirect, Cheryl. If however I registered DelBianco.bike, but I never even told the registrar where to send,
nothing is there.
Then I thought that was a 404. Barry is intervening to say that some registrars, some services will put up a park page.
Correct.
On their own. And Annalise Roger would say, though, that's not really what she means by actual use, probably.
And I'm saying that would still get counted, but you may need to note that it was a redirect to a park page. But you'd still
That's not a redirect. Well, okay, I see your point. Barry, is there a way to know, in a programmatic way, when you walk a zone, is there a way to know that it's a quote-unquote parked page?
Not with 100% certainty, although the name servers typically are isolated from real content name servers. So with some certain degree, you can kind of get at least a ballpark that this quantity of TLDs is assigned to these parked name servers or name servers that are only serve up parked pages.
But DelBianco.bike, as the owner of that site, I may have actually sought out one of these parking vendors who sends me a check for $14 a month on the traffic I get at my park page. So that's actual use. May not be of any benefit, but it is actual use. So I would stick to my earlier suggestion that we just put in parens, do not count, page not found, but do count everything else as actual use.
I think it's all you can do reasonably, Sue. Mm-hmm. Cheryl here for the record. And if and when one wants to go into greater detail, what Barry says is very important. You do get a feeling for the data when you see where things are, in inverted commas, resolving to. But you also, the system you use then is you do a sampling system. And, you know, someone sits there and, you know, insert whatever the large N number is going to be, might be 5,000 sites, and you look and you see how many of them resolve to something you've asked it to go to, Steve, versus a courtesy, in inverted commas, page put up by, the company you're dealing with.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Olivier?
Thank you, Rosemary. It's Olivier for the transcript. I believe that, technically speaking, it is pretty much impossible to find out whether Steve would park this page, whether the registrar is parking this page, whether the registry is parking the page, and the other concern is we're spending much time on discussing something which might eventually just get thrown out, because we have to remember, ICANN does not deal with actual content. And here we really are delving into classification of content, which becomes extremely hard. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Olivier. So, taking all that on board, then if we go back to our measure, which is the geographic diversity, in parentheses, do not count privacy proxy registrations, and then I think we're adding a second parenthesis. Indeed. And then Barry in the chat suggested we just think about the inclusion of the outreach and awareness type comments in the survey that we discussed before. And I'm just not sure where we landed with that. So if you have a look in the chat, can this be tied to Andimac's inclusion of outreach and awareness within that survey? Thanks, Barry.
This is Steve. Rosemary, yeah. I mean, the awareness question has nothing to do with those who actually register. Awareness is measured for those who were, quote-unquote, potential registrants.
Mm-hmm.
And the diversity measure that we've been responding to in number 31 or 32 is about actual registrants. And we know they're aware because they took the action of registering.
Yes. Barry, could you just scroll back up to that Andimac suggestion where what we've said is that we will incorporate outreach and awareness of new TLD questions into the survey. Okay, so I think that my question is, that response there in item number 28, if we can now scroll back down, Barry, do we just want to repeat the fact that we've done that in response to 31? So we're going to stick with our quantitative geographic measures, but note that we've included a question about outreach and awareness in our consumer survey.
This is Barry. The only reason I tried to make the connection back to Andy's is that, right, he is more focused on the outreach and awareness, but it's in the context of geographic diversity, you know, that because I think we all know where his passion is and the customers that he helps and assists. So that was his vantage point. But I agree the way Steve had just mentioned, they are different at this point. The registrants are already aware and have been outreached to.
Mm-hmm.
Rosemary and Barry, to pick up on that, word understood across each region. The word understood across each region is up in Annalise's paragraph. Barry, if you highlight that, please.
I don't have...
It's the middle sentence, Barry, in 31.
Right, in 31.
Mm-hmm. It's that middle sentence.
All right. I can't highlight right now.
Well, I'm sorry, then. Rich, where you are. I thought that you could. So the word understood, that could be linked to Andrew Mack's awareness survey. The understood is understood in the terms of the
population, not just those who registered. Other than that, word under not a tight linkage, but why not say that we're partly responding to Annalise in measuring understood as part of awareness, and we're doing that back under the previous item. So I'm agreeing with you that there is one tiny linkage between 31 and Andrew Mack, and we should point it out, but not seek for it separately.
No. Okay, so I think we're now done on 31. Are you clear, Barry?
Yes, just taking some final notes.
Yep, good. Yep.
Okay, 32. This is from INTA, and this is from their comments from their metrics chart, and I believe they're proposing a new metric here. As noted above, we believe that the definition of consumer choice should be and should include consideration of the experience of Internet and DNS users. The CTWG should consider including the following description of survey measure in the section on consumer choice metrics. Survey of consumer experience and ability to locate sites offering information, products, or services for which they have searched the Internet relative to their ability to do so before the GPLD expansion. The survey could measure consumers' ability to locate sites utilizing domain name searches rather than keyword searches. Although the measures include several that analyze the quantities of PLDs using IDNs or languages other than English, these do not provide a satisfactory measure of the relative success of the opening of the DNS to IDN. Clearly, by permitting the establishment of new GPLDs using non-English and non-Latin characters and scripts, the DNS is offering a greater choice. However, in addition to demonstrating that such domains are being registered, we believe the relative success of allowing such domains should be tested as part of the analysis. We therefore propose that another measure be included which compares the percentage of IDNs in each script or language to the percentages of people who speak or utilize each particular language or script. These percentages should converge over time. Determining whether new GPLDs actually provide for greater consumer choice or merely a proliferation of new domain names is an important measure. Thus, the measure of the number of defensive registrations is an important metric for consumers who rely on trademarks and trademark owners to protect their respective marks. In this regard, we note that the defensive registration measure includes not only top-level domains, but second-level domains. We do not, however, believe that privacy proxy registration should be excluded from the numerator in this calculation.
Thanks, Barry. Steve?
Thank you. I believe we covered most of this earlier, so this should be quick. My proposal to help respond to this is something we already agreed to, which is on our table of metrics, we were going to add one referencing a consumer survey, and I would propose putting it first in the table, not at the end, because the first item in the table was the transparency and clarity of registry benefits, and I think that we should put the first one to be a survey. And the way we should just it's to reference place consumer the attempt to measure the meaningful the extent of how consumer choice is meaningful, which we've already added to the definition, will be ascertained partly through an online consumer survey, the same online consumer survey under consumer trust. The consumer choice elements that would be measured in that survey include, and we've already covered a few of them, but having to do with the search engine performance, the user confusion about the choices, the ability for consumers to report whether they understand that they have the choices and whether they believe those choices are meaningful. So we can add to the elements that we would propose that the survey vendor measure, but we want to make it clear that it's the same survey described back on our table of consumer trust. It isn't a new $100,000 survey. It's just more questions on things survey. Maybe quite long. So my proposal is to make it a new row on page 9 of our advice letter and referencing consumer trust survey and try to pick up some of the stuff that INTA has asked about here. Thanks.
So, Rosemary here, Steve, so you, you're referencing the same survey in the measures of consumer choice on page 9. But it's the survey we talk about, pardon me, on page 7 in consumer trust.
You've got it. And then we delineate a few of the things from INTA's comments so that it's clear that we are being responsive. But we're only not only being advisory to ICANN's. Wait a minute. In the first place, we're advising the GNSO, ALAC, CCNSO, and GAC. In the second place, they may or may not take our advice when they send it up to the board. And, of course, the board's only going to advise a survey vendor to design a survey. And at that point, a couple of years from now, the survey vendor may say, that's too many questions. So we're doing our best. But we can't control things that are three orders of magnitude away.
Okay. Any other comments? Now, Barry, would you mind just scrolling down in 32? Because my recollection is that that deals with the first point, but the last paragraph has got this point about measuring defensive registrations and the comment being not to exclude privacy proxy registrations.
You've already agreed to that on about a month ago.
Sorry, Cheryl? Sorry.
No. I was just saying I think that loops back to our previous comments on what I call dirty data. I get excited about that, as you know.
But Cheryl, this is Steve. Almost 4 weeks ago, I have written down early in May, we did strike the words, do not count privacy and proxy, from the very first measure of consumer choice. Mm-hmm. With respect to defensive registrations, because we did not care about it. The defensive registration, whether it was registered in the sunrise period or not, that was our crude measure.
Mm-hmm.
So, frankly, if something's registered in the sunrise, we were calling it for crude purposes a defensive registration, and, of course, it wouldn't matter at all whether that happened to be privacy or proxy or plain. That's why it's not dirty data for that purpose alone.
It's the big bucket, yeah. That's the big bucket, yeah. Okay.
Rosemary here. So now, I'm not understanding where we're up to on this point. If I look at our page 10, we've got in paren, do not count privacy and proxy registrations. And they are saying we do not believe that they should be excluded. So they want them put back in.
Yeah, that's what they're asking.
That's what they're asking, but our position is that we, as I read page 10, we've excluded them. But then as I was listening to Steve, I thought, hang on a tick, no, we're saying put them back in for that sunrise period.
But only for the sunrise period.
So it's only for the...
Because it's getting a rough measure of what is happening at the beginning.
Okay, so
that's right, Cheryl. If you guys are able to turn to page 10 of our table, we need in early May to strike the words do not count privacy proxy just for that row.
Okay, so that's for the first row. Yep.
That's, and we
first,
struck
first and second.
That's right. You're right. And we therefore took it out of the italicized note at the top of page 10. Because we kind of overstepped. However, right. we are keeping the do not count on the geographic diversity.
Correct.
Okay. All right. So we've picked up the last point in that case. Got it. Okay. So I think we're done on 32, unless there's any final growling. No. So we go to 33.
Okay, 33, this is from INTA, as well as from their comments on the metrics chart. Specifically, they're referring to page 10, metric number 3. Survey a sample of duplicate registrations and new GTLDs for purposes of this measure. Duplicate registrations are those where registrant reports having and still maintaining the same domain name in a legacy GTLD.
As for the measure of duplicate registrations and new GTLDs, we note that this measure is to be based on a survey of registrations of second-level domain names in both a new G and in a legacy TLD to determine a relative percentage of domains which do not increase the amount of consumer choice. Although described as a survey, we believe a better measure could be attained by suggesting that the review team develop online searches and analysis of actual online sites rather than relying on a survey of site owners. Additionally, similar studies have already been undertaken, including several relied upon ICANN economic experts. This may be the intent of the measure, but not clear from the draft advice.
Any comments on this one?
Rosemary, Steve?
Yes, Steve.
I'm inclined to accept INTA's comment as suggestive in our advice to the board.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, where we say online survey, we could say online survey.
Mm-hmm.
Or automated analysis, or I wouldn't even say automated. Online survey and slash or analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Include, where we said anticipated difficulties. We think it's obtainable using an ICANN external survey tool.
Mm-hmm.
And or an analysis of actual registration. So I would propose that our advice to the board is to consider one or both of those ways to
mm-hmm.
get to the metric. Because our real point of view here
mm-hmm.
is that we went way out on a limb to say that duplicate registrations help to contribute to this notion of defensive registrations, which don't really contribute
mm-hmm.
to... Now, I don't want to get too far in the weeds at staking our reputation and our good work on whether it's a survey or an analysis.
Mm-hmm.
But I welcome INTA's advice to say that maybe this could be done with an analysis.
Mm-hmm.
Almost like you verbatim import their suggestion on an analysis and bring it in here, because we don't know whether a survey or an analysis could be done. And our
mm-hmm.
advice to the board is either one or both of those.
Mm-hmm. I think that's a good way forward. Are there any other comments on that suggestion?
Fine by me.
If not, Tobias? Tobias, we're not hearing you. Perhaps you're still on mute.
Oh, sorry. This is Tobias. I'll repeat what I said. I would be happy with adding this, but it looks like there is a footnote in INTA's comments. So there is a number one just before the last sentence. And it,
mm-hmm.
perhaps we can find some more specific references as to the methods used by other people who have done this before, and we can basically just add this footnote, if we can verify this, that it is correct, into the part of anticipated difficulties. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. So, Tobias, you're suggesting that it's a cut and paste from their comments. Is that right?
Yes, we would basically have to look at what the footnote says and whether we can verify it.
Mm.
But if someone has actually done this, then this can help us to assess the practical difficulties.
Mm-hmm.
I'm just assuming that this is a footnote.
Yes.
I have the INTA comments at hand.
Mm-hmm. I guess my own reaction is we have so much work to do that to... undertake to verify their comment is possibly just a step too far. So if we, in our process, reference their work, then I guess when we get to the actual survey or online analysis or whatever we do, then that work could be done then. So would you be
I didn't mean to do a full assessment. A brief look. Usually, footnotes, half of my students' footnotes are incorrect. And before I just cut and paste something, I prefer to look at it. That's all I meant.
Yes. Okay, so any other thoughts on that suggestion? So, to be honest, I think it might be easier if we just stick with the general proposition that Steve put forward, if you don't mind, Tobias.
No problem.
Okay.
This is Barry. I'm trying to find that footnote. I'm very confident that the one that I had in there is a footnote, but I can't find it out of their original PDF document just yet.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm fairly confident that that's what I copied out of there.
Okay. Well, perhaps we could leave.
It's not. It's really not a big deal.
No.
It could shed some light on the practical difficulties.
Mm-hmm. So, perhaps if we could leave it with you, Barry, to just tidy that point up, as long as you're clear on what we're suggesting.
Basically, the recommended action is going to be to include online survey and or an automated analysis of actual registration, and and that the future review team would consider one or maybe both ways.
Mm-hmm. Good. Thank you. So when you're ready, Barry, we can go to the next point. Bearing in mind that we're about 15 minutes to go, and I want to just make sure we comment on that point from Wendy Seltzer. So perhaps if we have a crack at the next point and then come back to Wendy's point, and then that would leave us enough time to just strategize about how much work we've got to do and how much time we've got left. Thanks, Barry.
Number 34 is also from ENTA, and their comments from the metrics chart. Specifically, they're looking at page 9, metric number 2. Registrar's website should clearly disclose GTLD benefits and restrictions and terms and conditions for each respective PLD they offer. ENTA also suggests that in addition to determining whether registry websites clearly disclose benefits and restrictions of the particular registry, there should be an empirical determination made whether such community-based websites actually meet the proposed purpose of the registry. Only if they meet their proposed purposes by providing the disclosed benefits and registration should they be considered as increasing consumer choice. The ease of locating and accessing terms and conditions should be considered.
Any comments on this point? Tobias, I think your hand is up from the last time.
Thanks, everyone. They bring up a good point in that we thought it was enough to measure the intended city in the sense that some special purpose PLDs would have a restricted pool of registrant. The only ones that can be held to it contractually are the community-based PLDs. Let me see if I can repeat that. If you're a standard PLD, what's the word?
Mm-hmm.
Community-based, and there's
geographic and standard.
Mm-hmm.
Standard, okay. So if you're community-based, then your registrant restrictions are an enforceable element of the contract with ICANN.
Mm-hmm.
If you are non-community-based, and propose that as part of your pitch to get the TLD. Once you've won the TLD, you can describe registrant restrictions on your website. You can encourage the registrars who sell your TLD domains to do the same. But ICANN cannot hold them as a contractual matter, an enforcement matter, to say that they keep changing their registrant restriction terms or they don't even honor them. And in recognition of that, it's a little bit of a hole, and I've brought this up after the business constituency at every ICANN meeting for the last year.
Mm.
And board acknowledges every time, yes, that's a significant concern because the registrant restrictions could have been what was given to the government to get them to withdraw an objection.
Mm.
Right? If I have a very controversial string, government begins to do an early warning, I tell them, no, we're gonna tightly restrain that.
Mm.
But if I'm not a geographical, if I'm not community-based, I can't enforce it. Later on, a government could raise hell and say, you said you would restrict the applicants to those in the banking business, and you're not.
Mm-hmm.
You violated our letter. We're upset, but we can't make it an ICANN contract compliance problem.
Mm-hmm.
Well, not, unless that gets solved, and it probably isn't going to get solved, we do have a hole in here mm-hmm. because we're simply assuming that if a TLD operator says that they have restrictions, that's good enough to indicate some diversity.
Mm-hmm.
So INTA is recommending that we add a measure, I guess, auditing whether three restrictions are in fact being enforced
mm-hmm.
In the case of a non-community-based TLD.
Mm-hmm.
So I think this is worth considering.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not positive that I would endorse it yet, but it's worth considering adding a row on page 9
mm-hmm.
that for non-community TLDs, it would be useful to understand whether registry operators are enforcing their self-proclaimed registrant restriction, period. And I would put that in for the purpose of our working group. Once Barry puts it in and adds the row,
yeah,
I think we as a group want to consider whether we want that in there or not. But INTA is accurate that there is a bit of a hole. Thanks.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Steve. And Jonathan's also supporting this.
Yeah, fair enough.
So I suggest we adopt Steve's way forward, which is that Barry adds a row on page 9. Under measures of transparency and clarity, I guess, is where we're putting it, Steve.
I would put it at the end. There's three of them in a row. They should clearly disclose.
Mm-hmm.
Registrar should disclose, and mm-hmm. they should be clear and understandable. You might add a fourth row under there.
Mm-hmm.
Or along the lines of what I just discussed.
Yep. Okay. Are you clear on that, Barry?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. So does that... So she now just looking at 35. Perhaps if we just finish 35, then we finished kind of a block of work, I think. Clear and understand both plain English. Let me read it. TLD registry benefits and restrictions clear and understandable to registrants and users. Both plain language and clarity of benefits and restrictions should be measured and rated. Okay, so, and I think if I'm looking at the third measure on page 9, I think we're doing that. We talk about a survey of registrants and users to assess clarity. Are there any other thoughts on that particular comment from INTA?
Cheryl here. When we made the change to expand the earlier survey, isn't that to some extent picking up on this issue, if not totally picking up on this issue? My response to this, and maybe I've just had enough of my day-to-day already, but so if it's fuzzy thinking, for heaven's sake, tell me. But doesn't this really deserve a yes, noted loop back to our expansion of the survey, blah, blah, blah?
Rosemary, I think that's right, because we're talking about a survey of registrants and users, which is our survey of consumers, could assess clarity. So if we make it a point, one of the things that we want that survey to do is assess clarity, then I think we're there.
But also the benefits we discussed earlier, as well as things like how much they, in inverted commas, trust it and, mm-hmm. and all that sort of stuff, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And their experience and yeah. issues. And,
are there any other comments on that point? If not, then, Barry, are you clear on our response?
Yes, and basically it's just to take note to include mm-hmm. The benefits and restrictions within the consumer choice mm-hmm. survey.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Rosemary, can we get the next one done? Because to me this one's a no-brainer, but it might just be to me.
Yep. Okay, let's have a crack at it.
Cheryl here. For my response mm-hmm. is no, we're not in the business of trying to expand the scope of ICANN to mm-hmm. look at the accuracy of things such as search engines.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, to me it's a, well, thank you for your comment, but mm-hmm. it's out of scope.
Mm-hmm. Any other thoughts on that one?
This is Steve. Earlier in the conversation, we did say that the survey of consumers would recommend that that survey also assess whether consumers are satisfied that search engines are able to help them distinguish between websites in different TLDs.
Yeah.
That's satisfaction, not accuracy. That's a measure of consumer satisfaction with search engines. That's fine. But
you got it.
To measure
satisfaction, we might even say, would report confusion, or would they report satisfaction? And
correct.
We'll leave it.
Yep.
Look at that. Far be it for ICANN to be the one to arbitrate that. It's really users, then. They'll vote with their mouths.
Yes.
The search engine that serves their interests best by giving them relevant results. Accurate is not in a meaningful term. The word relevant is, and the market already will reward the search engine who provides relevant.
Okay. Barry, have you got that?
Yes. Basically, no action and going to be covered within the survey of consumer choice.
Good. Okay. So I think we need to stop our work on the public comments. And I'm going to change the order in which we're going to do things now, says she arbitrarily. Barry, would you mind just reminding us how much more work we've got to do reviewing public comments and how many meetings we've got to do that work before we need to be tying down where we're at ahead of Prague?
We have about 15 more consumer choice metrics to review, and then we'll move into competition definition and the competition metrics.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a total of, and then a few general comments. So we have a total of 73, and we just finished at 39, I believe, or 35.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Halfway. Over halfway.
And the number of calls we've got between now and when we need to be saying this is where we're at?
One.
Okie doke. So we're either going to have to be very efficient or else call out that we're in the middle of this process and haven't quite finished. I'm not sure that there's any other way of proceeding apart from doing what we can do and letting people know where we're up to.
Well, one alternative, I don't love it, but is to have more calls.
Yep. I can't think of anything else.
Yeah, well, I was wondering how the group would feel about at least scheduling one other call. Jonathan?
Yeah, I don't know if this is possible, but it could be that a little more work could be done in coming up with a taxonomy of types of questions. It seems like we're often answering questions by going back and referring to how we answered other questions. And if we could come up with some categories of discussions instead of going comment by comment, try to really boil this down to the discussions we need to have and then have it apply across comments, even if it leads to a 20% decrease in specificity or something, this process might be more survivable.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so Barry, would you mind just having one more look at the table to see whether there's any further consolidation that can be done in categories of comments?
Right. I tried that starting out and... it was too much of a risk to lose context of actual comments stated.
Mm-hmm.
And
mm-hmm.
I would, given the visibility of this, I prefer that we go mm-hmm. comment by comment. The 12 June 2012 is just an internal date the working group established to try to get the advice letter back to the council in terms of being able to stand in front of the council at doing what we're planning to do now for Prague. But it's
mm-hmm.
not the official delivery of the document, or it's
mm-hmm.
too late to actually officially deliver the final advice letter to be considered by the council in Prague.
Mm. Okay, so...
Jonathan, barring that... Sorry,
Jonathan?
I was going to say, just barring that, and again, I haven't thought about this more than 5 minutes, but I mean, are there some core principles? I mean, one of the, one that just popped out that Cheryl came up with is not expanding, ICANN's mandate, et cetera, come up with some categories of answers then that help to be guiding principles to how we're doing this. Because there's an amazing amount of overlap in terms of the conversations we're having, at least, between
mm-hmm.
these things.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so I guess the nub of all of that is that we need to try, at least, to be more efficient, and perhaps that will be possible now that we've worked our way through around about half the comments. We do seem to be identifying a set of core issues in the comments, and then more quickly, I think, getting to whether it's in ICANN's mandate or not, whether it can fit into the survey or not. So in terms of our responses, I think we're getting a bit quicker on that. So if all of us think about that, and try to adopt that approach next time. So the question now is, do we want to schedule a call? Are we thinking between now and the 12th or between the 12th and Prague?
Rosemary, it's Steve. I mean, I
yes,
put this
Steve.
In the chat, but based on what we did today, it would take three calls
yes.
like this to finish.
Yeah.
Three calls like this to finish. So why don't we think
mm-hmm.
in terms of... three more calls at a reasonable interval, and if
yeah.
we do that, that the date would be what the date is.
Okay. Well,
if you agree with the math, and Barry, I'd look for your
yep.
verification. I mean, did we do roughly 12 today?
I think we did.
A little more than 12. Cheryl here. Some are easier than others, and as we get through to the later list, there's actually a few almost, well, in my view, no-brainers.
Yep.
But if we go for three more calls, then we're motivated to get the job done, and
yes.
we can do it. And I'd be keen to, go into Prague saying this bit is done,
yes.
even if it's just a matter of saying it's standing up in our reporting sessions.
Mm-hmm. Okay, well, perhaps if we could leave it to Barry to suggest some days for those calls, spread at a reasonable interval.
Well, can you work with Gisela, please? Because Olivia and I,
mm-hmm.
our
yes.
lives are now run by Gisela. But coming up
mm-hmm.
to Prague and even during Prague,
mm-hmm.
if I want to have lunch with a girlfriend, Gisela
mm-hmm.
organises it.
Oh, okay. Well, I'll give her a call.
I'm actually joking. Literally.
I'll give her a call.
Well, if you ask me to have lunch before Prague, I would say check with Gisela.
Okay. All right. Are you happy, Barry, to have a go at working with Gisela to come up with three dates? Jonathan, is your hand up because you want to make a comment on all of this?
No, I thought I'd put it down. Sorry.
Okie doke. Given that we're going to have some more calls, my suggestion is we leave the Wendy Seltzer comment to the next call.
Yeah, because I don't want to treat it lightly. We really have to.
No. I think it raises a very important issue, which we probably address in the advice letter introduction, I think.
Yeah.
All right. Well, okay. So I think... Sorry, Barry, yes?
We for sure have the 12th, and I think we could easily do the 19th. So now we got to try to figure in a third date. I'm guessing that the 6th, 7th, and 8th are probably too soon to accommodate to the varying schedules. So we'll target the 13th, 14th, or 15th through a doodle poll. So we'll have the 12th and then a second meeting that week and then try to close on the 19th.
Yes. That, I think that's very wise thinking. Barry, thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, anything else quickly? No. Okay, everybody. We'll get together on the 12th.
Bye, all. And, Steve, I'm just changing all my passwords now to your name, so don't worry about it.
I think we should all hang up and leave you two to it. Bye.
Bye. Bye.